everybody. Welcome to Mount All of those of you that are online, and of course, those in the building and the chapel. So glad you're here. Isn't this just the absolute best service of the year? Every time we do baptism, I always say it's just the best service. I mean, this is why we exist. And I'm so, so proud of all of those that got baptized. And maybe God's been speaking to you, and it's time for you to take that public stand as well. And if so, we're having baptisms next Sunday, so let us know, and we can have you do that as well. You know, one of the, it is so important for us to gather as God's people, whether that's Sunday morning in our services or in our small groups throughout the week. But gathering as the people of God is so important because gathering always leads to organizing. And as we gather, we begin and we continue the process of organizing ourselves around God and His mission. Around God's mission. And in fact, the baptisms this morning was really that, right? It was helping us. It was helping them as confirming their faith and declaring that publicly. But it also encourages us and organizes our lives, again, around Jesus and the mission that He has given us. So over the next 2 weeks, as we lead into Easter, we're going to do a series that is going to help organize us around God and the mission He's given us. And we're going to do a series on Love Is in the next 2 weeks. You know, often when I preach a message, the message will either answer a question that we've kind of been wondering about or you've been wondering about. Sometimes I will address a tension that we've been wrestling with. Well, today's message is going to be a little bit different. Rather than answering a question you've been wondering about, I'm going to give you an answer that you already know. But what we're going to find is that answer is actually going to leave us with a question. And as followers of Jesus, it's the question that we should all be walking with and wrestling with every single day and minute of our lives. Okay, so the answer is the answer to the Christian life, and you know this, the answer to the Christian life of as to how we should live the Christian life as Christians, you know this answer. No, the answer is not Jesus. That's the Sunday school answer. The answer to the Christian life is love. And you know that, right? I mean, the answer to the Christian life, as to how we are to live the Christian life, the answer is love. And this has always been the answer to the Christian life, and it will always be. It will never change. The answer is love. But that answer leaves us with a question that we should wrestle with every day of our lives. And we're going to get to that at the end of the message. So if the answer is love, well, what does love look like? Well, you've probably heard, and if you're a parent, you've used the golden rule, and that's one way that we understand this is how we love people, right? The golden rule, and Jesus spoke this as well, is do to others what you would have them do to you. Do to others what you would have them do to you. In fact, and almost every religion of the world has some form of the golden rule, and if you're a parent, like I said, you've probably used the golden rule on your kids, right? Like, kid, do you want, you know, your brother to share with you? Yeah. Well, then you should share with your brother, right? If you want them to do this for you, do it for them. Or, you know, like, do you want your brother to hit you? No, then stop hitting your brother, right? I mean, we use this as a form of understanding this is what love looks like, right? I mean, if you're going to love someone, do to others as you would have them do to you. And this is a high standard, isn't it? I mean, for many of us, we see this standard, we're like, sometimes I hit the standard. Sometimes I just fall short of the standard. I don't even do to others what I would wish they would do to me. I mean, I just fall short of the standard. But here's the deal. This is not the standard for the Christian life. If the Christian life, the answer to the Christian life is love, the golden rule is not the standard of love for the Christian life. Jesus, on the night that He was betrayed, He was about to be crucified, gave what Andy Stanley has come to call the platinum rule for Christian living. Jesus, on the night He was betrayed, gave the platinum rule. And this is the platinum rule that Jesus gave to His disciples, which extends to us as well. On the night He was betrayed, Jesus said this as He sat around with His disciples. He said this at the supper table. He said, "A new command I give you, love one another." To which we're all like, I don't think that one's new, Jesus. I mean, I've read the Old Testament. There's a lot of love people and love one another. This isn't a new command, but what Jesus was saying is, listen, you've heard about love, but what I'm commanding you and the way that I want you to love, it's a whole new understanding of love that you have never really even known, not fully. You've never known. And so when Jesus used the word love, he actually used the word agape. Agape is a Greek word, or agapao. And that Greek word for love was a very uncommon word. It was not widely used in the Greek culture or the Greek language. And Jesus, it's almost like he, and then John, as he would write this years later, almost like they were trying to find a new kind of word for this brand new kind of love that no one had really known before. And so he says, listen, a new command I give you. This is a new understanding of love. In fact, as culture would continue and Christianity, the church would continue, the way to understand agape love, the word that Jesus used, even in culture, the way to understand it can only be understood through the person and the work of Jesus. It's like you need Jesus to define this love. And so Jesus says, a new command. I want you to think about love in a new way. See, we think about love as a feeling, as something we think. We think about love as something we fall into and out of. And maybe that's you, right? You're like, I fell into love in grade 8. And by, you know, grade 8, second month of school, I was out of love. I fell out of love with her. Or maybe you got married because you fell into love. And now you don't want to be married to her or him anymore because you fell out of love, right? We think love is something that comes and goes. It's something that happens to us. And Jesus says, a new command. Love, agape, agapao love. And when he said that word, it wasn't a love that happens to us. It wasn't a noun, something we think or feel. It's an action word. It's something we do. Love, Jesus would say, is not something that happens to you. It's something that you make happen to others. And so Jesus would define this new understanding of love, and then he would define it in the fullest way he could think of. And he would say this next. He would say, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. Here's the standard for the Christian. Love one another, a new kind of love, agape, agapao love. And here's how it's defined. As God has loved you in the person of Jesus, as I have loved you, Jesus would say. And this was so personal on that night as Jesus sat with his disciples around the Passover table. And Jesus could have looked at every one of the disciples in the eye and said, listen, as I have loved you, and he could have started with Matthew and said, Matthew, as I have loved you, love one another. Matthew, how did I love you? Where were you at when I met you? And Matthew would have said, well, Jesus, I was a tax collector. And Jesus would have said, exactly. Nobody loved you, Matthew. You were a tax collector. When you read about tax collectors in the New Testament, it always says that there were sinners and tax collectors, which means this. There's sinners, like people here on the totem pole, and then there's tax collectors way down here. They had their own category of sin because nobody loved tax collectors, and here's why. Tax collectors were Jewish men who would work for the Romans, collecting Roman taxes from their own people. But not only did they work for the Romans, in that sense they were traitors, they collected extra taxes. On the authority of the Romans, they would collect more than they were supposed to, and they would get wealthy off the backs of their own people. They were stealing from their parents and their grandparents and their aunts and uncles and their sisters and brothers. I mean, they were the hated ones because they were so low. And Jesus would look at Matthew and said, listen, Matthew, nobody loved you. Your mom didn't even love you. Nobody loved you, Matthew. As I have loved you, I invited you into my circle. I made you one of the 12 disciples. As I have loved you, that's how you're supposed to love others. That's what this love looks like. And Jesus could have looked at, okay, Peter, what about you? How did I love you? And Peter would say, well, when I met you, Jesus, you did this grand miracle. And when I saw the miracle, some of the first words that I ever spoke to you, Jesus, were this. Jesus, leave me. I am a sinner. I am not worthy to be in your presence. And Jesus would say, you're exactly right. You're not. I'm on a whole different level than you. But what did I do, Peter? I invited you in. I made you part of my team. Now, Peter, as I have loved you, not when you earned it, not when you deserved it, as I have loved you, love one another. And Jesus could have gone along, Nathaniel, just moments before Nathaniel met Jesus, this is what Nathaniel said. He trash-talked Jesus' hometown. Jesus was from Nazareth, and before he ever met Jesus, he heard about Jesus, he said, Nazareth? Can anything good come from Nazareth, right? Which is the modern day equivalent of saying, Troshu, can anything good come from Troshu, right? Or if you're from Three Hills, Three Hills, can anything good come from Three Hills? The moment I said that, everyone from Troshu just hates me, right? You would never let that go. But here's what Jesus did. He said, Nathanael, I let that go and I made you part of my team. Even though you trash-talked my hometown, saying nothing good comes from Nazareth, I came from Nazareth. You said nothing good was in me and I forgave you. And I invite you to be part of my team. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. Agape kind of love. And you know what? All of this would pale in comparison to what Jesus was about to do. From that Passover meal, he would be led. He would go to the Garden of Gethsemane, and then he would be betrayed by one of his own friends. And he would be taken to a cross, and he would be killed. He would take on our sin, your wrongdoing. And the death that we owed and that we should have paid. And he would be crucified in our place. Romans 5:8 says, while we were sinners, not while we were seeking God, not while we were trying to get better, not while we were doing pretty good. While we were sinners, Christ died for us. And Jesus said, as I have loved you, not when you earned forgiveness, not when you deserved forgiveness, not when you earned love, and not when you deserved love, so you must love one another. And then Jesus would say this, by this everyone everywhere, by this, everyone will know you are my disciples if you love one another. For Jesus, this love, this agape love, not love that happens to us, but love that we make happen, love that is an action, love that doesn't fall into, not a love that you fall into or fall out of, something that you choose to do. Jesus says, if this is the defining characteristic of my people, if you do this well, people will look at you and they'll say, wow, you must be a follower of Jesus. You must be a follower of Jesus. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples. You know, this would become the so much the central piece of Christian living that just within 20 or 30 years, the Apostle Paul would come along and he would write the most famous words ever penned regarding love in the history of the world in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And Paul would write these words about love to a church that was struggling to live out the love that Jesus had said, as I have loved you, love one another. This was a church that was fighting in themselves. I mean, they were trying to climb, you know, say, who's the who's who of Christianity, right? Who's the cat's meow of Christianity? Now, here's the deal. I just learned this week that the cat's meow, that phrase, is actually millennials use that. So if you're not a millennial, you don't know what I'm talking about. But it's the who's who of Christianity. And some were saying, hey, I've got the gift of speaking in tongues and God's language. I'm the who's who, right? And others are like, no way, I got the gift of miracles. And they're all trying to say, what's the most important gift? And Paul comes along and says, listen, you missed it all. You've missed it all. Here's what he says. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give all over my body to the hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Paul's point is this: you can have everything and yet miss it all. You can have everything and yet miss it all. Let me give you an idea of how this works with this illustration. Imagine a superstar in the sport of your choice. You pick the sport, figure it out in your head. A superstar in the sport of your choice, but it has to be a team sport. Now imagine this superstar in your team sport of choice is the best athlete that sport has ever known. They win every individual award. Every time the statistics come out, they're just head and shoulders of everyone else in the league. Imagine that person who's won every award individually in a team sport, and yet their team is always at the bottom of the standings, and they never win the one thing that actually matters, which is what? The championship. In team sport, it doesn't matter how much individual success you have. You can have it all, but if you never win the championship, you have nothing. And that's what Paul says. Listen, you can have everything. You could have every award, every gifting, every skill. And yet you could still miss it all. Here's how he says it. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. I think we need to have a demonstration of this because otherwise it's just not going to make sense. Now imagine for a second, most of us love drums. I love drums. And cymbals are part of drums. When they're part of the kit, it just sounds awesome. But imagine if you had an 8-year-old. I have one of those. Imagine if you had a kid who decided, you know what? I just want to bang this cymbal for 13 hours straight, okay? This is what it would kind of feel like. Now, some of us struggle to imagine. So I'm just going to do this for the next 13 hours, okay? Okay, I'm just kidding. But you know what? Something that could be so, so awesome and be part of something so, so good suddenly becomes so annoying. And that's what Paul says. Listen, if I speak in the tongues, if I have the language of heaven, of angels, people would look at me and be like, wow, you've got everything. And Paul says, no. If you take out love, it's like 13 hours of listening to your kid bang a cymbal. Just stop. Take your heavenly language somewhere else. I don't care, right? And he goes on. He says, listen, if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. See, these are some of the very things that we want as we follow Jesus, right? I mean, we want more knowledge. I want to be right. I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to be right. But we want more knowledge. We want faith. I mean, who of us doesn't want to walk into a hospital and clear the hospital rooms because we had faith that could move mountains and healed everyone? I mean, who doesn't want that? And Paul says, listen, you can have all that, and if you don't have love, you're nothing. And he goes on, he's not done. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardships that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Even if I sacrifice everything, because I'm so generous. But I don't have love, I lost. In essence, you can have everything and yet still miss it all. So the answer to the Christian life, and you already know this, you already know the answer. The answer is love. But that, I believe, leaves us with a question. A question that all of us must wrestle with. A question we hate as Christians from time to time because we don't want to wrestle with it. And the question that I think every Christian should wrestle with day in and day out, all of their days, is this. What does love require of me? Not fall in, fall out of love. Not, I feel like it. It's something that happened to me. Agape, agapao love. What does love, the way Christ has loved you, what does that love require of me? See, the question that will always be the question when it comes to the Christian life is this question. The question is not, am I right? Now, that's a question, and it's an important question, but it is not the question of the Christian life. A question that's important is, do I have the gift of the Spirit? It's an important question, but it is not the question of the Christian life. Do I have enough faith? Do I need more faith? Those are important questions, but they are not the question of the Christian life. The question of the Christian life is, what does love require of me? Because I can have all the faith in the world that can move mountains and clear out hospital rooms, but I can still miss it. I can have all knowledge and I can be right every single time, politically, coronavirusly, I can be right theologically, but if I don't have love, I missed it all. The question that I want you to wrestle with as we lead up to Easter, as we contemplate this love that God has shown to us in Jesus, is this question. So over the next week, at least, and beyond if you can, I want you to ask this question of yourself at minimum 3 times a day. Maybe it's in the morning, maybe it's at lunchtime as you come home from work or from the farm, as you come go grocery shopping, as you go to school, as you come home from school, whatever it is. But I want you to ask in the different areas of your life, what does love require of me? And this is a question we struggle with, because if right now you're in a marriage relationship where you're trying to figure out who's right or I'm right and I'm justified to do this and this, those are important questions to figure out if you're justified, but it's not the most important question. The most important question So what does love in this circumstance, in this situation, what does love require of me? As you go to school and you have students, as you go to school and you are a student with your teachers, with your friends, with your coworker, that kind of sounds like a resounding gong for 13 hours a day. You're so annoyed with him or her. What does love require of me? With your mom or dad who let you down and they deserve what you want to give them. What does love, God's love, require of you? You know, this past week we said goodbye to one of our brothers in Christ, our brother in this church, Michael Vaughn. And this past week, as I was thinking about this question, and thinking about Michael's life, he lived this. I've heard over and over people talk about Michael. He would give the shirt off his back. Everybody loved Michael. I had a teacher from a different school who's involved in athletics. And there's rivalry in athletics. And Michael was involved in athletics, who said, I don't know anyone, and this is unheard of, anyone who ever spoke poorly or badly about Michael. What does love, what would it look like for you to live the love that Christ has shown you out to others? I've said many times, the faith that we've been given was never meant to enter us and then stop and become stagnant. The love that we've received was never meant to stop and be stagnant. The forgiveness we've been given was never meant to enter us and stop and become stagnant. God's love was meant to enter us and then flow through us. Jesus would say it this way, as I have loved you, you, so you must love one another. Let me pray with you. Father, thank you for your word that challenges us. And this is challenging. But God, as we enter Easter season, may your love, the love that you have shown to us, may it be so overwhelming and so growing in our own thoughts and our own minds that we could do nothing but allow it to flow through us. As we go this week, may we love, Father, as you have loved us. I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at mountoliveefc.com. We'll see you next time.